Ready, set, let's go. Welcome to the Narc Abuse Breakdown podcast.
Love bombing can be very subtle, can look like the narcissist actually making sense for once in their life.
Narcissistic abuse is a predictable pattern of abuse carried out by a person with narcissistic personality disorder or high narcissistic traits.
What are they going to use to be able to really control you?
I'm Claire Auden, and together with Adriana Bucci from Let's Get Your Shift Together and Telsha Edinburgh from the T on NPD, we discuss different aspects of narcissistic abuse as well as reflecting on our own personal experiences.
Welcome back to the podcast. I'm Claire Auden.
I'm Adriana Bucci.
I'm Telsha Edinburgh.
And today we're talking about trauma bonding. What is trauma bonding?
What is that? That's a great, great question. You know, it's really, it kind of mirrors like the Stockholm syndrome, you know, a person just develops an affection and a love for their abuser. And so trauma bonding is much like that. It's like you bond with the traumatic instances in the relationship. And it's the thing that actually creates all of the dopamine surges and the oxytocin surges. And so people literally in a trauma bond, especially in a narcissistic relationship, they start to really look for the times where they're going to have the chaos and the confusion, because they look for what's going to come after that. Because they bonded over those particular and really bonded in those particular parts of the relationship, which is sick, but it's what happens in dysfunctional relationships.
Yeah, so it's actually it mimics an addiction, and I've done brain scans, and it quite literally highlights the same part of the brain as seen in a chemical addiction. So it forms through this like cycle of abuse and repair, just like you said. So in the bad times, you've got that high cortisol, you're walking on eggshells, there's abuse, and then there's a repair and they comfort you and there's a good time and they turn back from this monster into the love bombing version that you had in the beginning. And like you said, you get this massive hit of dopamine and oxytocin, and it's just like an addiction.
Yeah, it's basically created from the cycle of abuse, that love bomb, devalue, discard. And someone whose trauma bond might not even realize that they're being abused as this is happening, because it's so insidious. And it's really love bombing that kind of creates, you know, I get that it's considered an addiction. I don't like calling it that.
Yeah, I know you don't like that one.
Like there's going to be like physical symptoms from healing and all that.
It's like when someone has a gambling addiction and that, or like a addiction at like the pokies or whatever it is. And people can go into withdrawals after one of these relationships ends.
People can, when they're trauma bonded, they can have severe panic attacks, even in the night. So they can wake up with the night sweats and huffing, you know, just for the sleep out of their sleep. So that it won't be like a night sweat, like, okay, you have, but there are certain things like a panic attack that will bring it on. Trauma bonds can often cause chronic anxiety in the victims.
Really bad.
They can be shaking, vomiting, obsessive thinking.
Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, it's really just that love bombing really reinforces the trauma bond, because when you're in the devalue discard stages, all you want is for that love bombing to come back. And that's kind of, you know, why people stay. And it's just this very, you know, because when you're in that bubble of the relationship and you're not aware that it's abuse and you're so in love with this person, or even if it's a member and you care so much about them, you don't want to think badly about them. And it's, you've got this unrealistic positive view of your abuser. And so, you know, it's just, that pretty much perpetuates the trauma bond.
Yeah. And there's this thing that kind of happens. It's like a mix of two things. When you're in an abusive relationship and there isn't like a clear way out and you feel trauma bonded and stuck, the brain as a trauma response represses the instances of abuse. And so a lot of times people aren't thinking clearly and they can't even clearly remember the abuse. And, you know, people blame themselves and the narcissist gaslights them and tells them that they're the abuser. And then the other thing that happens is that when people take that responsibility onto themselves, they can preserve the relationship. Because when you're in one of these relationships, your brain plays tricks on you and you suppress the abuse and you hyper-focus on the good times and there's all these stories going on so that you're able to remain in the relationship, essentially. So there are 7 kind of recognized stages of trauma bonding that people talk about. And it essentially follows the pattern of a narcissistic relationship. So like Adriana was saying, it starts with love bombing, and then there's that creating trust and dependency. And then once you've got that trust and dependency happening, it turns into criticism, devaluing, belittling, things like that. And then the 4th stage is gaslighting. And then the 5th stage is resignation. So resignation to the relationship, resignation, essentially in these relationships, you start walking on eggshells, you stop trying to stand up for yourself, you stop trying to explain things. And then that turns into the 6th stage, which is loss of self. And then the final stage is emotional addiction.
But the pattern of the actual cycle that the narcissist mm-hmm. takes us through. And it just really closely mirrors that. But I think where it kind of gets off, and this is where we start to veer, is where we don't understand that in that pattern or in the stages of the trauma bond, when the gaslighting is introduced, it's usually like at the tail end of the love bomb and the future faking. It's usually right in there. And they'll start giving. I don't know if you guys notice this, but what they'll do is they'll give you stories with a lot of detail, or they'll start saying things to you about the future faking with a lot of detail. And then you remember what they say and they know what they said, but then they come back and say, no, I didn't say that. Uh-huh. I said, and you're thinking, oh, but it was such a beautiful story. You don't want to make waves about it. You know, you don't want to fight over it. And they know that. That happened to me. And I was just like, the gaslighting was so crazy because it was really upfront. And when I thought about it, I was like, oh, wow, that was kind of in the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was hideous.
Yeah. And it often starts really subtly. Like, I think yes. there's a lot of misconceptions about these relationships. You know, people are always like, oh, I'd never be in that situation. I'd never let that happen. And it's like, they think it's going to be a clear cut thing. People that haven't been in these relationships, like you're in the relationship, the person says, like, punches you in the face and then says, I didn't punch you in the face. And they're like, oh, that's clear. That's gaslighting. I'm out. Right. People have these really unrealistic expectations about what it's like. And the truth is it can start so subtly, like you're saying, and it can start like in jest, you know, like you think you don't remember something. And then the person's like, oh, babe, you're so forgetful. And then you're like, oh, yeah, I guess I'm forgetful. And it builds like that. And it can be like, so forgetful, babe. Oh, you never remember things. Like, don't you remember that this happened? And you're like, oh, okay. Because you don't assume that you're dealing with someone that's gaslighting you or that you're dealing with a pathological person. And it can build.
It's amazing because it's so true what you said. I mean, like, did you experience some of that too, Adriana? Like it was subtle, just like you said. It was like kind of at the tail end of the love bomb where you're developing that trust and, you know, they're future faking. But I think those words were perfect. Oh, you're so forgetful, or you don't remember that I told you that. And they know mm-hmm. they're telling a whole lie, like they did not say it. Or they'll say, oh, remember we had this conversation, and they'll tell you all of these details about the conversation and you never had the conversation with them.
Yep. And it's so subtle at first too, right? Because they can't dive in with the not so subtle gaslighting mm-hmm. from the get-go, because then you would pick up on it too quickly. So they do it very subtly at first. And like Elsha was saying, it's very much done after that love bombing into the future yeah. faking, and then like right before the devaluation starts. And like, it's kind of like, once the love bombing's almost finished into the devaluation, it's like that period. And they really, you know, it turns into that period once they're satisfied that they've gained your trust from the love bombing, because you're not going to believe somebody that you don't trust. You have to like this person. They make themselves very likable at first so that, you wouldn't have anything bad to say about them, obviously. And then it starts so subtly. And it's really once they know that they've gained your trust and you really start showing them that you trust them. It's like the future faking starts, the little bit of gaslighting starts, and it'll be over something really stupid sometimes where it's like, oh, like I drank this flavor of coffee this morning. What are you talking about? Like, it'll be over something that's such a nothing thing. And then when you're sort of in that level of trust with that person and you're just starting to like, you know, in a new relationship, especially, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, well, you know, that's not a problem. Like, let that slide kind of thing. Everything else has been amazing. So I'm just gonna, you know, kind of pretend that didn't happen. And people don't go into relationships like expecting like, I'm gonna date a narcissist this time and it's gonna be great, right? Like people go into it with intentions. So
yeah,
exactly.
Even the criticism and the devaluing starts subtly. Like they test the waters, like they subtly put you down or they subtly start picking at something or they tease you a little bit too hard. And it's like, they're just testing the waters. Like you said, Adriana, it's like that love bomb is there. And then the other things start creeping in and they almost start the subtle gaslighting and the subtle criticism as this way of testing how much trust and dependency and love that they've actually been able to cultivate.
That's so true because it's dependent. They test the love, they test the gaslighting based upon how you're responding to what they say. You know, they want to see what level of trust. Are you trusting them to come in your home without them? Are you giving them the keys to your stuff? Are you laying it all out for them? And then that's going to determine the gaslighting, the level of the gaslighting that they're going to, because once you begin to fully trust them and you give them more access to you and your things, the gaslighting becomes more severe. It's crazy.
Yeah. And it's also, you know, in these relationships, like particularly in the love bombing period, they're taking up all of your time. They're kept calling, texting you all day long, seeing you every day or multiple times in a week, starting to isolate you from your friends and family. So you're getting that dependency and it's getting to the point where it's like their voice is the main voice that you're hearing.
They're running the show, basically. It's all about them. And they make it so that you get close so fast so that they gain your trust as fast as possible so they can start abusing you more severely as they go.
And to what you were saying before, Adriana, I mean, that devaluing starts and you're like, oh no, like they're upset with me or they're not liking me or I'm not on that pedestal as much. Let me scramble to try and bring back the adoration and love and the attention. So let's talk about the resignation and loss of self aspect.
I mean, it's easy to lose yourself in it.
Yeah.
I mean, once you lose a grip on your reality, yourself is pretty much lost in that because your reality is part of yourself, of who you are, you know? And so when someone starts to reframe your reality, they're actually deranging your life, your mind, you know, just by tampering with your reality. And so then you become a shell of who you are because you don't trust yourself anymore. So who are you? Like, what am I saying? Who am I? What am I doing here? And I need to be dependent on everything that you say because obviously my brain doesn't work correctly anymore. And that's how it goes. And it's very sad.
I think it's also worth pointing out that I know I've been going a lot into cult psychology and cult indoctrination and brainwashing and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, narcissists and psychopaths use the same tactics in romantic relationships that are used in brainwashing and cult indoctrination, which if you think about it, makes sense because all cult leaders are narcissistic or psychopathic. But I think that people outside of these relationships don't understand like how all-encompassing these relationships become. It's like a little mini cult.
100%. And it starts small too, right? Like, it's not like the first day you meet this person, your life is all about them. It starts off small, the way that you lose yourself. It'll be like, oh, like on your drive to work, like this, you know, what this happened to me with the very once upon a time narcissistic ex, where he would call me every single morning. And so I was just driving to work, my entire drive to work, we were on the phone just talking. And, you know, in hindsight, now that I think about it, because it never occurred to me, it's like I lost that part of myself where, like, you know, I just had my quiet time to myself on my drive into work, where I would just be listening to music and just, you know, chilling.
Yeah.
And now it was like I was focused on him. And that's how I started my day. And then, you know, I'm at work, and then after work, the drive home, we're on the phone, right? So it's like,
yeah,
it really just becomes this thing where it's like, you don't even realize that they're invading your space, but they're doing, but it's not done in a way where it's like, you could call them out on it, because it would just be kind of like, oh, like, don't you want to talk to me in the morning? Like, you know, that kind of thing. So you kind of like push that down, and like, it doesn't even occur to you. And then over time, it just becomes like more and more, you know, more stuff about your life starts getting invaded. So if you have like a hobby, you might have less time for that hobby, because now you're dealing with this person and, you know, going out with them instead of, you know, your Friday night bowling club or whatever it is, you know, like,
they build themselves into your routine.
Yes, exactly.
They do. Yeah, every part of your life, they infiltrate like a freaking, wow. Yeah, they do.
And it's like, we talk about love bombing, and it's love bombing kind of, it's obviously a very negative thing, but it's like kind of almost has a positive sound to it. But every aspect of love bombing is about gaining power and influence over the person. There's nothing loving about it.
Exactly. No. It's manipulation. It's all bullshit. That's the thing that people don't understand about love bombing, because when you're trauma bonded, obviously all you want is that bombing to come back. But what you don't recognize when you're in that bubble is that this is abuse, because there's nothing genuine about it. It's just an act. It is a mask that this person is wearing to gain your trust so they can abuse you even worse moving forward.
Abusers are so good at cultivating that dependency and the desperation. Extreme dependency, extreme desperation.
And sometimes even normal relationships will kind of take on some of the same characteristics. But what I explain to clients, especially when, you know, they're like, well, what's the difference between a normal relationship and, you know, this? I said, with a normal relationship, in the beginning, it could be more intense, you know, the calling and, you know, texting or whatever. But as you guys get used to each other and you get comfortable and the trust is established, you start to back up a little bit. And then the time.
That's security.
Yes, it gets longer in between the times that you're talking in the day and texting. And you may have your time that you speak at night or at lunch in the day, but it's not the constant texting. It's not the constant calling because this is a normal person and they don't need to do that now because they're more comfortable and secure, and you are too. But with a narcissist, it does not work like that. It goes from intense to cold. When they get ready to tell you, it goes, then you're wondering about everything. It doesn't just have that slow thing off period where now we're in a flow. You know what I'm saying? It's like,
there's that extreme volatility, those highs and lows. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So when someone gets discarded and they're trauma bonded, and they've gotten to this point where they've been living in the narcissist's reality, essentially being forced to live in that person's reality, they're extremely dependent on that person. There's the desperation. Usually there's isolation. The trauma bond is there. There's that level of addiction. And when people get trauma bonded, generally they feel like they're actually going to die without their abuser. I think that's really hard for people who haven't been in that situation to understand.
I agree. Like, You know, I dated many narcissists, but two in particular, I literally thought I was going to die when I got discarded. I had like, you know, really bad suicidal thoughts with one.
Yeah.
And even with my mother, like there were times where she would discard me and I thought I was going to die. Like I just, you know, didn't, you know, I felt like, it's like, I felt so like it was such a punishment for me that I felt like I let her down so badly that I didn't deserve to be alive kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, I when I was discarded, I like physically collapsed. I was in public and I was like physically collapsed. Look at Tasha's eyes. Tasha's like, what? I was like, I'm had like sorry, a full on.
I should have probably turned my camera off.
I had like a full on abandonment wound meltdown. Like I was crying. I was shaking like Adriana. I felt like the suicidal thoughts. I just felt this absolute desperation. I felt so dead. And I felt like something was so terribly wrong because I knew he was abusing me and I knew I couldn't say anything good about him. And I didn't know what trauma bonding was. And I was like, whoa, something is terribly wrong with me.
You know, I, didn't have that experience. No, let me stop. But when, because I think, okay, let me just say this, okay, because if I say this, it'll help you guys kind of understand. So with me, I had an inner knowing that something was wrong, right? That inner knowing is part of my spiritual gifting, which did not allow me to attach in a way that was going to be detrimental to who I was, even though I was I felt like I was idolizing him and he was abusing me. But I just knew after a certain point that, and we had gotten engaged. I was like, I'm not going to marry this guy. I just know it's not going to happen. We went to the store, picked out the rings and everything like that. And then I just was like, I took him on a whole different side of the store. Cause I was like, this is the hopeful side of the store, because by the time he finishes paying for this ring, I'll be long gone. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, I just knew it wasn't going to happen. Now, what I did experience was the extreme anxiety. Like I didn't feel like I wanted to like die, but I felt like it was this huge oppression in my soul. Like I just was so sad. Like I had the sleepless nights and I was just like, God, what is happening? You know, and I think the only thing that really saved me in that moment was my relationship with Christ, because it was very hard. And it was, I was trying to understand what was happening because I had never experienced anything like that before. And that was my first narcissistic. Now, that wasn't my first introduction to a narcissist, because I had experienced that with family members, right? But in a loving, like a intimate relationship, it was very hard and I didn't understand it. But I think I know that my spiritual grounding was the reason why I did not just like completely want to just, like you guys said, like to die, because I was like, I'll push through this. My whole mindset was like, you're going to get through this. This is hard, but you're going to make it. You're going to make it. I just had to keep telling myself that, because it was really, really, it was difficult because I didn't know what was going on. I was like, okay, but what is a narcissist? You know, and I was in therapy and she was trying to tell me, but I'm like, what the freak is supply? Because I don't understand that either. was bad.
I want to go back to some of the extreme reactions that people have, because I would say that most of my clients have that really extreme, really strong reaction to being discarded. And there's a lot of confusion and a lot of shame and a lot of behaviors that kind of go with that. Like people, when they're discarded because of that extreme desperation, they can go into what essentially is withdrawals, they're shaking, people can be vomiting, obsessive thinking, turning up at the narcissist's house, begging for answers, continually breaking no contact. And of course, the narcissist is loving this. because it gives them supply that you're talking about, Telsha. It makes them feel powerful and strong. And especially if people turn up at their house and they can take out a restraining order, they get a massive kick out of that. And that happens a lot. That's happened to a lot of my clients. Adriana, what other kinds of feelings and behaviors did you have when you went through this?
A lot of shame for sure. Like that was a big one, because it's like I thought something was wrong with me and I did something so horrible that caused this person who was like the most important person in my life to, you know, no longer see me the same way. And I really believe that it was because something was wrong with me. So I just felt like I am not a good person. Like I don't deserve anything good in life because I obviously made this person feel this particular way. And so that means I'm bad. So,
There's so much self-blame after these relationships and people go insane going back over the relationship, rehashing things, going, if I'd only done this, maybe we'd still be together. If I'd only done that. And people go into this extreme place of like literally wishing that they could have shut up and taken the abuse because then maybe they'd still be together. I wish I hadn't tried to be friends with my family. I wish I hadn't tried to see my friends. I wish I hadn't done these things because then maybe we'd still be together. And the other thing is that, you know, in these relationships, the narcissist is continually blame shifting, projecting, gaslighting, and telling you that you are the problem. And they tell you when they discard you that it's your own fault that it happened. And so there is a huge amount of self-blame and people hate themselves because they're like, oh, I've like lost the love of my life because I stood up for myself once. I think that that shame is really, it's really strong for people. And it's really important to talk about as well. And there's also a lot of victim blaming in society. Like society doesn't understand. People are like, oh, you're crazy. Do you like being abused? Like you should be happy that this terrible relationship is over.
Yeah. They don't understand like how trauma bonds work and how the cycle of abuse really causes this whole thing to happen to begin with. And it's like so easy for someone who has never experienced it to say like, oh yeah, it's your fault. Like, you know, you got yourself into this kind of thing. But I'd like to see those people try to get out of the trauma bond, you know? I mean, like those people in particular, like maybe experience a mild one and then we'll talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Because when you're working from, you know, most of us, the narcissist wasn't our first introduction to abuse, right? Mm-hmm. Most of the time. So you're already working with a faulty foundation, right? So you're going into it with a faulty foundation, one with holes in it that has caused you to have a compromised attachment style, right? Mm-hmm. So then you go into it and you're just like, what the heck is happening? So I don't like the victims shaming and blaming, because I say this and I tell my clients all the time, you're not responsible for the lie that someone told you, right?
Yes.
You're responsible for your healing. You are responsible. Yeah. And you have to take it seriously and you have to see it as you taking it on yourself. This is no one else's job but your own. Mm-hmm. But you're not responsible for the lies that someone told you and the maybe the fake fantasy that you built upon the lies. But once you found out that it was a fantasy, I often say, you know, narcissists will live, you know, they basically live, we live their reality while they live our fantasy, because we give them the fantasy of what they while we're forced to live their reality with the gaslighting, the, you know, the blame shifting, the projecting, the lies, we're forced to live that, but we're still trying to give them the fantasy of the world that they want to create. You know, we're still trying to give that to them. And it just literally breaks us down. And I say, you know, you can't, you're not going to fix them. Because you're gonna try to fix them while you're breaking yourself the whole time. Can you imagine?
Yeah.
You're breaking yourself the whole time trying to fix another individual that is unfixable.
Yeah.
So I don't like it when people say, oh, you know, you should just snap out of it. Well, that's not a narcissistic relationship, is not a normal relationship. You've literally, your whole entire existence has been abused by this individual. Every part of you have, you know, every part of our being has been affected by this abuse. So you can't just say that, and it's on another level. This is something that is not natural. So when it's not natural, that's a supernatural experience that you're having with a being that you think is a total human, but you're just like out of this world. Yeah. It really is.
It's a monster in a human suit.
Yes. That's the perfect example. That's the perfect name for it. Really. Mm. Not even a wolf. It's a monster.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Evil. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's like once you've gotten to that point in this relationship where you've lost yourself to that degree and you're depending on them, one of the ways that people do really lose themselves in these relationships is that that narcissist does force you to live in their reality. And it gets to this point where you can't be yourself on any level because they just crush you and punish you and shut you down. You self-censor, you stop standing up for yourself, you stop expressing yourself, you stop bringing up your feelings. Everything is centered around that person and trying to make them happy, trying to keep them happy, try to bring that love bombing version back, trying to get them to love you, desperately trying to survive. And people who haven't been in that situation, it's like, you know, just, you just can't understand unless I think you've been in it. I remember being very, very, very frustrated once, and this is going to sound harsh, but I was very frustrated after having a conversation with someone who just didn't get it. And there was a lot of victim blaming and things like that. And I was talking to my psychotherapist and I was like, you know, I think everyone should be in a relationship with a narcissist or a psychopath at some point in their life so that they can see what it's like to have their mental landscape mangled to the point that they don't even know which way is up anymore. Totally. Tasha laughing.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry because the choice of
light and healing over here.
It's like you have your mental landscape mangled.
Yeah. One of these fucking monsters in a human suit.
But it's true. It's like, you're in a whole sword storm. Stop it. It's crazy though. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to laugh like that, but it was just too funny because it's like people don't understand it. Sorry, funny. It's true. I mean, it's not funny, but it's just the choice of words.
You have to laugh through the craziness or you'll go insane.
And you know, that's one of the things that I tell my people too. When you learn how to laugh at the situation, that's a great sign because it kind of show, you know, it just lets you know that you're beginning to heal. And I often like to use a humor in my content. And I love it when people say, you know what, I have not laughed, and they leave a comment and they're like, I have not laughed this hard in years. Yeah. I've been crying so much, but listen, you have just really brought the laughter out of my soul. I just love it when I see comments like that, because it's like, yes, I hit them in that spot. They're going to heal now, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Humor is such a good way to heal. Yeah.
It is. It is.
Do you have this experience, Adrian? So being trauma bonded to my narcissist and like going through that trauma bond and healing and repeatedly breaking no contact and being desperate and feeling like I was going to die. Like now I look back and I laugh at myself. I laugh.
Absolutely. You have to laugh about it, right? Like once you reach that point where in your healing where you can laugh, it's so important too.
Yeah.
We'll have to have her just really to record that, how she just explained that and framed it so well. And just, you know, it's just amazing. And just put it on a clip and everybody's going to be dying. Like
everyone should have a relationship with a narcissist and have someone rearrange your mental landscape. By the time she gets to landscape, I'm done. I'm on the floor because it is such a reality check. It is. I mean, what about it is not true? It's all facts, no cap. You know what I'm saying? It's all facts. It's just the way that it is. And, you know, the way she said it was just amazing.
I just hate when people are like, oh, I would never be in that situation. I would never put up with that. And it's like, and I'm sure you ladies experience this as well. We've done this work for a while now, and we've worked with a lot of people. And it's like when someone's telling you, and you know that person, that they would never be in that situation, they would never put up with it. And you're looking at them and you're like, yeah, you would every single time. You would have fallen for all of it. You would have gone in for all of it. You would have done everything that I did and worse.
Right.
Never say
or
never.
Or be the person that's abusing, right?
Or be the person that's abusing.
Yeah. When they say, oh, I would never do that. Yeah, because you're probably the narc.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, that's what I would say about
vibes.
Because when people say, huh?
Seriously.
Vibes. Because when people say, oh, I would never allow someone to do that, it's like you, to me, that's already displaying like you don't have or your empathy, you know, your empathy gauge is compromised. You see what I'm saying?
True.
You know, because you're like, I would never. So what do you think about me that I have gone through that? Because to me, that's a hard-nosed individual. That means that you're probably an abuser yourself.
Exactly.
And it's a lack of empathy red flag. You're right. Like, why can't you envisage being in someone else's shoes?
There you go.
Yeah. Lack of empathy.
Exactly. 100%.
I pay attention to that, like that.
Yeah,
very much so, because it's very telling about the person's personality. Sometimes you don't even have to really, you don't really have to get into a long drawn out conversation with an individual. Sometimes the body language and you just have the right conversation with them, not a long one, just the right one that can bring in feeling and emotion, and not the fact that they can't, because you can still give it on a surface level and normal with a, you know, a normal reaction to things. But when people start in and saying, you know, using those hard negatives like that and things like that, you have to kind of take a step back and you have to reassess the situation. And then when people start saying things like that, I don't talk as much. I just watch them and listen.
I like that.
Everything.
Now, something else that I get asked a lot is the narcissist also trauma bonded to you? And you know, some people say that the narcissist is also trauma bonded to you or is also addicted to you. And that's rubbish. They need supply, but they could get their supply anywhere. And they're also not being put through the cycle of abuse. They're putting you through the cycle of abuse. And they don't love, bond, or form attachments in the same way. And they can just turn around and walk out like that without a care in the world. What do you ladies say?
Yeah, it's such bullshit that anyone would even say that the narcissist is trauma bonded. No, they're supply bonded. They love the high quality supply that you're giving them. And that's what they're addicted to. But if you stop giving it to them, they're going to just find it from another poor person that happens to be their next target. And that's all it's ever going to be about. Like, they do not genuinely care about you. Whereas the person who's trauma bonded genuinely cares about their abuser, but the abuser does not care about their target. They just care about what they can get out of their target. And they will say whatever they need to say to make you feel sorry for them, or, you know, make you stick around for as long as possible and believe that, like, you know, they need you. But no, they just need supply from whoever's going to give it to them.
Yeah, slot you out, slot someone else in.
Right. But I mean, I don't even know if they're, I mean, like Adriana said, I mean, they're addicted to the supply. I mean, how could they be trauma bonded to an individual, you know, when it's a, when they're an abuser? You know, they, abusers like to abuse people. They like many people to abuse. They don't want to just abuse one person. That's who they are. If they're an abuser, they go from one person to the next doing the same thing. And then when we're talking about a narcissist, they, you know, the best supply a narcissist loves is a new supply. But the crazy part about it is once they get the new supply, then the old supply rises to the top of the food chain again. Make that make sense. Because that's one of their biggest, like, you know, prized possessions is to be able to go and re-idealize old supply. So when we look at it, you know, the victim, you know, or the survivor is trauma bonded, but a narcissist could give a care less. They want supply. They're addicted to the supply, not the person or the situation. I mean, can you imagine an abuser being, oh yeah, I'm addicted to beating the crap out of something, you know, like it just depends on what gets them the best reaction, you know?
And the abusers, and they're like, oh, I'm going to die if I can't abuse this person anymore.
They might say something along those lines, but
they'll say that they love you and they're addicted to you and they need you and they've never felt this way about anyone ever before and they're going to die without you. They'll say that. They'll turn on the waterworks and say whatever they need to keep you as a backup supply.
But it's bullshit.
And they love that line. I've never felt this way about anyone before. They love that. Did you guys hear that too?
Oh, every time. Yeah. Every narc.
I saw this hilarious TikTok video and I can't remember who it was by, but she was talking about how she's like immune to love bombing now. And she made this comment. It was so funny. She's like, oh, if someone says to me like, oh, I've never felt this way about anyone before. She's like, you're 30 years old. That's embarrassing. What am I?
That's hilarious.
That's embarrassing. That's awesome. I wish I'd said that to mine, who's in his 40s. I've never felt like this about anyone before. That's embarrassing. That's a red flag in itself, buddy.
Yep.
I know I'm great, but
you're near half a century old. 20 years away from being 50, and you never felt that way. Tell them it's embarrassing. They would be like, I hate your. You know what I'm saying? Like, really bad explanatives coming out of that.
Yep. How to get discarded immediately.
Can you imagine shaming them like that? They would be like ready to fight you. You know what I'm saying? Just do something really horrible to you. God. Yeah. That's really funny.
Okay. So I think the last question that people ask a lot is how long does it take to recover?
How long is a piece of string?
No, I love that, Adriana. Who told you that saying? Where does that come from?
You did. It comes from Australia.
Yes. A whole lifetime, right?
A whole continent.
Right. A giant island. How wacky long sayings. Yeah.
How it just depends on how hard you work. Mm-hmm. Some people think that it should be over like right away, you know? Mm-hmm. And some people, especially, it just depends on the person. Because if you're dealing with a toxic codependent, it may never happen. They may never recover. Because if they don't realize that they're toxic and they're a codependent, and they just want to live in that world, then you get your borderline, which is a whole nother situation. So it just depends on the person and how dedicated they are and what type of baggage are they dealing with personally outside of the narcissist. Like, what was your trauma as a kid? We can start there. You know what I'm saying? We can start there because essentially that's what the narcissistic abuse, the foundation of the abuse and where it was able to be cemented in the relationship is based upon the trauma that we have endured, right? Yeah. That's where this abuse finds its foundation in our lives. You know, when we're in intimate relationships, it's going to, that their abuse is going to be laid on top of the trauma that we've experienced. So in order to get to the core of that healing, you have to go back to the beginning. You know what I'm saying? And that's what people don't want to deal with because sometimes it's sexual abuse that they suffered. It could be some type of violation. It could be
physical abuse, anything that they have experienced as a child, it has to go back to the core and work outward and start peeling the layers back. You know what I'm saying? But you got to go to the core of the issue. So it's going to be dependent upon how dedicated they are to going to the core of the problem.
Yeah, I think I would just say that there's not always a pre-existing codependence, and not everyone has a history of abuse. Anyone can get sucked into one of these relationships, particularly if they're in a vulnerable state when they got in the relationship. If they're going through a big life transition, if they've had a big loss, and that person comes along and knows what to say. In terms of healing, I think that it's not so much about the time, but what you're doing in that time. There's like unpacking the story, there's learning about narcissistic abuse and manipulation, recognizing what you went through, seeing that it's not actually at fault that you were with a pathological person and that they create that extreme dependency. And then there's the layers of abuse, and then you've got breaking the cognitive dissonance, working through the stories that you're telling yourself. It's hard when people are telling themselves that they've lost the love of their life and their best friend and they'll never ever feel like that again. Breaking down those stories and rewriting them is really important. What would you say, Adriana?
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, it depends on if you have the right tool.
Yeah.
Because my clients come to me as a last resort most of the time because they've tried the therapy with a therapist who doesn't get it. And I'm not shitting on therapy at all. Like, there's so many that don't get it. And, you know, you can go, like in my case as well, a decade, therapist after therapist after therapist, different modality after different modality, could not figure out what was wrong with me. Like, no one told me about narcissistic abuse. Like, I had to literally get chronic pain and learn about repressed emotions that are connected to the chronic pain in order to actually heal from all of my childhood wounds, to get out of the pain and actually heal from all the narcissistic abuse I had been through. And so that's my experience personally. And, you know, I still consider myself on my healing journey. Like, you know, there's milestones on it, of course. So for me, the first 4 months were like the heaviest because I was doing the most intense work. And that was, you know, how long it took me to get out of the physical pain that had manifested from all of the abuse I had been through throughout my lifetime. But I'm 5.5 years into my healing journey now. And the way I see it is that as long as you are alive, like, life is going to throw shit at you. There's narcissists everywhere. Like, no matter how you slice it, they're everywhere. And as long as you have the right tools to be able to process those repressed emotions, because really, like, emotions are not given enough credit for how big of a role they play in literally every aspect of our lives. And so once you really start getting in touch with your emotions and understanding like how your emotions were messed with in order to get you trauma bonded in the first place, then you can start releasing those emotions. And then, you know, you'll have less emotional pain and even physical pain because it's all connected. And then you also kind of become like the human bullshit detector because you understand, you know, you understand so well. So you'll be able to catch it so quickly if somebody is manipulating you. And if it's not like immediate, you'll catch it like way faster than you otherwise would have. But, you know, there's always going to be those times where you are vulnerable. And, you know, like it even happened recently to myself. Like last year, I had long COVID. I took a year off of coaching because I was just like in an awake coma. And then I got kind of targeted by this narcissistic business coach who, you know, it was like the entire cycle of abuse happened. And then, of course, I was like, how was I so stupid to like not recognize it? But I was just coming out of getting my brain back. So, you know, it's really like you have to really understand that it is not your fault that someone is manipulating you. And by doing that emotional work, you get to catch it so fast. So at least, you know, in that situation, I caught it within like a month, whereas otherwise I would have caught it like a year later. So, you know, there's that. But it's like, I don't remember where I was going with this, but you have to do the inner work is the whole point that I'm trying to say. Like, you need to really...
I think it's really powerful that you say that you're still on your healing journey, because I think a lot of educators and coaches want to put out this image that I'm fixed, I'm over it, like everything's good, I'm, you know, the human bullshit detector, it would never happen to me again. And, you know, I'm always really careful never to say that I'm healed, because I still have trauma that comes up from time to time. I think that most of us are still on a healing journey, and I think that a healing journey can last a lifetime. And even myself, like, I've had times over the last few months where I have started to get sucked in. And like you said, we catch it sooner, but it doesn't mean, because I've been vulnerable and I've started to get sucked in and I've gone a little bit further than I would have liked before I recognized it. But, you know, as well, within 3 weeks, you recognize it and you're like, oh, we're still learning. We're teaching and we're learning. And we're learning from our clients as well.
Yeah, we're human, right? Being a human's messy. And you're going to make mistakes. And it's all about accepting that with grace and, you know, just taking that next step.
Yeah. All right, ladies. I think this has been a great episode and a great conversation. Thank you so much. And we'll see each other again in the next episode. Thanks for listening to the Narc Abuse Breakdown podcast. Click follow for future episodes. Leaving a review helps others find the podcast. Plus, check out the show notes for all of our social media channels and websites.